Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 18th. I'm John Gibson, and with me again late on a Saturday night is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I am surviving like Gloria Gaynor, baby.
You will survive. Even if it kills you.
Ostensibly. Ostensibly. Yeah, I'm in survival mode. Yeah, I had basically spent the day on assignment to our rugby bureau. Covering Japan's test with Italy in Kobe, which was really fun. But, it meant getting up at 6 and getting home at 10 in the evening, right. Not the morning. So, yeah, I'm a little wiped out. But, I spent all that time on the train not dealing about rugby, but writing my blog. So it was not wasted time. Well, although some of my
so say you. Come on, give me a chance to throw that high heat, man. I'll call time out before when I'm in my windup.
You gotta read it before you complain.
I actually
about
read
it.
Half of it, but I was still, I was getting in my windup here to throw the high heat, and you just like calling time out on me, man. That's not fair.
You gotta take it in. You can get to take it in from the half.
All right, line. All right. Okay. On this week's show, we have a chat with Matt Carasetti of the Yakult Swallows. We're going to discuss interleague play and the Swallows doing well in interleague play. Talk about home runs and a whole lot more and answer some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I traveled way out to MetLife Dome at Seibu Kyujo Maya Station.
makes it sound like the immortal Ed Odd, even the treacherous journey from Arkansas to Japan.
Right. And I had to walk.
Circle the wagons, baby.
I had to walk on both sides of the tracks. and I went out there on Wednesday to catch up with the hottest team in Japan, the Yakult Swallows, and I got to talk to first year reliever Matt Carasetti. And I asked him how to say his name, and that's how he said his name is pronounced. Although a lot of people call him City, that's his nickname. You'll hear him say that on the interview. And he came from the Rockies, and he was brought here in the offseason to be Yakult's closer. But that didn't go so well, and he had a tough start. And now he's, speaking of starts, starting. And so he has already had a whirlwind 3-4 months. Starting his career in Japan, but I talked to him, like I said, I had mentioned before during the Coco Ballantyne interview earlier this season, I had spoken with Matt and he really wanted to come to Japan. He really wants to play here and he wants to spend a long time here. He's 26. He turns 27 next month. We talked between the hallway that's behind the mirror room. But in front of the little dining hall there at Seibu Dome. It's MetLife Dome. I know. Don't correct me. So you'll hear.
Of it.
You'll hear some shuffling of slippers. Every day I'm shuffling. That's just a joke. I know you don't get that reference, Jim. I'm hoping some other people do.
Okay, that's fine. I don't get most references. When you're my age, you're happy if people think about asking.
You're happy if people think that you're alive?
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, pretty much. If I'm, Jim's still breathing. Great. Good deal, Jim.
You hang in there, buddy. So you'll hear some other sounds. You'll hear David Buchanan, who walked by once to say hello and then again to get his pregame fist bump with Matt. And he was the Swallow starter that day. And As I said earlier this year, I did spend about 30 minutes talking to Matt at Tokyo Dome, but we wanted to get some of this on tape. We have a lot of things that we have common when it comes to baseball, so let's take a listen.
All right, we are standing with Matt Carasetti, and that's how it's pronounced, right?
Yes, that's it, that is.
Of the Yakult Swallows, he's joining us this week. Thank you very much for being on the show.
No problem, anytime.
All right, so what made you consider Japan as an option in your career?
Obviously, I'd seen a lot of videos, and I had actually talked to a couple guys that had played over here. And when I was in AAA in 2017, we had a guy, CC Lee, Taiwanese guy, and he had played here the year before. I asked him where he played the year before, and he said, in Japan, and he loved it. And I think he was in the minor leagues the whole time, almost. But he said it was awesome, so it got me thinking. And my agency has a lot of ties over here. They have Messenger and Whelan, so They told me it would definitely be an option since I was going to be a free agent, so that's just how it came about.
Now, you struggled as much as a guy could, I think, in your first month here. What was the experience like?
It was tough. I mean, obviously, it's different being in a different country across the world. But to me, I think it was just I was trying too hard to put my stamp on my position, and I was just trying to do too much, and getting sent down to Tota honestly helped me just refresh. And obviously I wasn't happy getting sent down. You don't want to get sent down. I didn't come over here to play in the minor leagues, but I think it helped me out.
That's
Buchanan.
That's David Buchanan. David Buchanan walks by with
immature. He's very immature.
I bet you say that to all the guys. But anyway, so in the midst of that struggle, what was your mindset when the coaches would call you and ask you to warm up?
Once I get in the game, it's fine. But I think to me, at the time I was walking guys, and I've struggled with command before in the past. But for the most part, I'm in the zone. So to me, it was like, I'd go 2-0 on a guy, and then my mind would start thinking like, all right, I got to get back in this count, rather than just throw your pitch where they want it. And once the ball leaves my hand, I can't really do much about it. So I was just putting too much pressure on myself, and I think that was the biggest thing for me.
And there's been a lot of talk recently about the import pitchers not having as good a command with their secondary stuff as the Japanese guys. Is there some way you can learn to improve that while you're in Japan as a pitcher?
See, I think that my problem is when I can't throw my fastball for strikes, because for some reason I've always been able to throw my changeup in the zone, and I think that's always been my biggest plus, because I can keep guys off balance throwing my changeup 2-0, 1-0 for a strike. So I think that's been big for me, and I throw a forkball, so it's kind of hard to control. That's more of a two-strike pitch, but over the past couple of years I've been working hard to be able to throw that in the zone just to keep guys honest. But for the most part, foreign guys, I feel like a lot of guys, especially that come over here, have really good stuff, but obviously in the States they're fringe guys because of command. So some guys come over here and they flourish, obviously, and they they figure it out and they go back, or they stay here for a long time. But I think for me, mostly it's just keeping my fastball in the zone and throwing quality strikes with my fastball.
Okay. Now, we spoke before when we chatted at Tokyo Dome, and we talked about the hidden aspects of team play. I talked about sacrifice bunting, and you pointed out something that I hadn't thought of, and I wanted the listeners to get an idea of that. So how does the pitcher have an option of sacrificing things for the team? You talked about the fact that you had a guy on third base, and instead of trying to strike him out, you let the run come in.
Oh, yeah. I think, for me in the past, it's been hard to bite the bullet and let that run score, because in the minor leagues in America, it's all about numbers, and if you let a run score, you think to yourself, I'm not getting called up. Like I gotta have a perfect outing every time, And here, I feel like winning is such a priority, and it's definitely been a mind switch for me to say, okay, well, we're up by three, I'm not gonna make a bad pitch and let this guy hurt me. I'll make my pitch down and away, and if he hits a ground ball and the run scores, it's two outs and nobody on now, and it's only one run, rather than trying to be nasty and leaving a ball over the plate and a guy hits a double or whatever. But I think especially now with me getting a chance to start, I think that's going to be a big thing too, because you got to go deep in the game and give the team a chance to win. So it's definitely different than back in America in that aspect.
Now, you and I, we also talked about the fact that guys who sometimes maybe a starting pitcher who's on the bench when the game is ending, maybe in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings, the camera's focused on him because he's the pitcher of record and he could win it. And we talked about the fact that the guys, what does that aspect of the wins and losses for pitchers mean to you?
I think, obviously it's, wins and losses for a team, I think in general, is a big deal. But as a starting pitcher, me being a reliever for the last 4 years, I've seen so many games where, you know, so Buchanan goes out and throws seven innings and gives up one run, and we're winning the game 2-1, and he gets taken out of the game, you know, the camera's on him for the next two innings, like, you know, are we going to win? Are we going to win? And he has no say in what happens for the rest of the game. So it's a weird aspect of the game that the win or the loss falls on him even after he's out of the game.
Mm.
You know, obviously he doesn't get the loss, but he won't get the win even if he goes out and throws really well. So I think when you look at numbers, to me, I don't so much look at wins and losses. I look at, you know, even ERA sometimes can be crazy because of a couple games.
But right.
More so like, you know, hits and whip and stuff like that. You know, quality starts. I think if you look at Buchanan last year.
And this year.
And this year, even Huff this year, it's like, you know, they have, you can have 15 quality starts and you can have 15 losses.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way baseball is. So I think that in that aspect, you know, I would look more so at quality starts and even innings pitched. But yeah.
All right. So yeah, I saw early on it looked like the games that Buchanan and Huff and even Ishikawa were throwing, you guys were really competitive. And then after that, things kind of fell off, and it was hard to be competitive in those other three games. What did you see in the early on?
Early on, I think we came out the gate. We were pitching really well. We've been pitching really, really well lately, too. But I think sometimes it's just in baseball, it's a long season. You get into these, like, peaks and valleys, and obviously you want more peaks. But, you know, sometimes it's just hard to get out of those valleys when you're stuck and things just aren't going your way, and you know, sometimes guys don't make plays, sometimes you pitch really well and you just can't score runs, sometimes you run into a buzzsaw on the other team, you know, face Sagano or one of the big guys here. But you know, I think it's just the shorter you can make those, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously right now we're riding a wave that's been pretty good, but lately, the pitching has been, I think the pitching has been phenomenal, especially ever since I came back. Just from what I've seen, everyone is doing their job, and it's definitely cool to be a part of that.
Now, you mentioned that you're going to be transitioning to starter.
Yeah.
Again, because I saw something about that in a paper, and so that's true. So what's the transition like going from reliever to starter now?
I think the past 2 weeks, I've been throwing a lot more innings out of the bullpen. I threw 2 1/3 against Rakuten, and then obviously the other day I threw five.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been a transition through the bullpen, and I told them whatever they need me to do is fine. If they want me to start, I'll start. If they want me to keep doing what I was doing, I'll keep doing that. So I mean, obviously, nothing is set in stone during the year. So whatever they need, I'm going to do. But I think, you know, looking at it from my perspective, you know, I throw four pitches. And Ishiyama is obviously closing the door right now. He's throwing absolutely amazing. Kondo's throwing great. Macau's throwing great. And we have, you know, a lot of good guys in the back end of the bullpen. So for me, I came over here as a back end guy, and now I went to Tota and I came back, and those guys are pitching so well. You know, I just wanted to find a place where I could help the team.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that be long relief or starting, I told them whatever they needed. So.
Now, you made a transition in A-ball as well. You made a transition from starter to reliever. How did that go?
Yeah, I had a rough year in 2013 as a starter. I couldn't just get my feet under me mechanically. They were having me try a lot of different things. So, you know, I was 21. I, you know, got in my own head.
Young and handsome and dumb.
So I was listening to everything that everyone was throwing at me, and I just got – it was a whirlwind, so – you know, I came into spring training the next year. I was throwing like 87 as a starter, and you know, I like to think I was a power guy, and even now I like to think that. So I needed a change of scenery, and I went back to the bullpen. I closed in college for a year, so I knew how to do it, and I kind of just transitioned back, and I felt great in the pen. And you know, my mentality was, you know, go out there and, you know, let it eat for one inning and get three outs. So that was good for me, but you know, obviously I've grown as a pitcher and as a person, and you know, I've learned how to hone my aggressiveness, I think.
Okay. All right. So you talked about this team and how everybody's pitching well, and you guys got into interleague and you started winning a bunch of games. Yeah. Is this some random thing of baseball, or have you guys found something?
I don't think the way we're playing right now is a random thing. I think, you know, if you sweep a couple series, and you know you're winning weird games, it could be, you know, a stroke of luck. But you know, if you look at the games we're playing, they're tight games, close games almost every night, and you know, the pitching is shutting it down, and we're getting runs when we need to, big hits. Obviously, Valentin hitting home runs, you know, late in the game. We're getting, you know, moving guys over. We're pitching well, playing good defense. So I don't think it's, you know, it's a stroke of luck. I think it's the way we're playing as a team right now is kind of the way that this team should be, you know, for the rest of the year. And hopefully, obviously, you know, we don't play these teams much, so you could say, you know, they don't see us a lot. But, you know, these are good teams, like with good records, and the Pacific League is a good league, just from what I've heard. And you know, the hitters, Cebu obviously puts up a lot of runs. Puts up a lot of runs, and so you know, us shutting them down yesterday, and you know, the other teams we played. I don't think it's luck. I think it's just the way this team is.
What would the best record in interleague mean for you guys?
I mean that would be awesome, just to prove that, you know, we can play against these teams and put up a good record for whatever the 3 weeks or month that we play them for. Obviously, when it comes down to it, it's all about when you're playing in October in the playoffs, and that's the main goal, to get back and to be a winning team in the playoffs. But it would definitely be a nice boost to go into the second half playing the Central League if we could, you know, come out on top in interleague.
Okay, well, you guys have jumped up in the standings, yeah. So I'm curious to see if you guys can keep this up.
for sure.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, this guy, I'm going to tell you, Jim, I don't know if you met him yet, but he's got huge hands. He's got hands that are huge, like Coco Ballantines. It's like, they're like mitts, and it's no wonder he can throw a baseball. But in fact, I was thinking if he and Coco Ballantine got together for one of those handshakes where you cup the hands, you know, that it would sound like an M80 firecracker. Their hands are so big together.
Wow.
Anyway, what stood out for you in the interview?
Well, first of all, I'm mad.
Hi, Mad. Nice to meet you.
I'm not going
to
take it any. Oh, yeah. Well, humor on hold tonight, but otherwise, no, I'm jealous because, you know, this is the kind of interview I just really die for, because we've got somebody who's all through the interview, he's talking about perceptions and, you know, and how he's dealing with changing perceptions and his attitudes about different things and changing from perceptions to experience and taking, you know, or adopting a slightly different point of view. And I love that stuff. I love about how people interact with other cultures and other dynamics and then see things a little differently, because, well, it's just kind of the thing I write about so often. So I'm really eager to talk about this guy, but I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was such a interesting, from that standpoint, it was a very attractive interview for me. The bit about biting the bullet and allowing the run to come in was interesting, you know, changing his mentality or adopting a different mentality was really interesting. And I think the other one that I liked was the bit about the fastball. And the bit that you mentioned is his hands being big. Sort of thought, aha, okay, to me, the first, and I almost can see this, if he's got big hands, it's going to be, a changeup's almost going to be really natural for him, because you get so much surface area on the ball. So I would see that in forkball, of course, would also be a natural if you've got long fingers. So, but interesting enough, it's locating the fastball, and basically he's natural at pitching backwards if he's throwing, you know, 2-0 change, you know, 1-0 change ups and 2-0 change ups. So he's almost like he's found his spiritual home. his spiritual pitching home. Although, and the other thing that kind of got me started, because I didn't really have much of an impression of his pitching And, you know, you said it was about as bad as can be, and I had to really look for that part that was as bad as can be.
Well, I mean, the start was bad, in that, yeah, he didn't have success. I mean, he was brought here to be the closer, and as soon as you start giving up one run or two runs or walking guys all over the place, yeah, it's I don't know that his ERA might not have reflected it, but
he had four or five games where everything was okay, and then he had these four games where he gave up a run in mm-hmm. each. And 11 base runners in 4 2/3 innings. Okay, that's,
that could hurt.
You could do worse, but that's not the objective. That's not the goal. So I understood that, and that was interesting. And again, his comments, he sounds very analytical. He thinks about things on a meta-linguistic, I don't know if that's the exact word, but on us kind of a different level. He sort of steps outside and analyzes things a lot. So in some cases, often, but I enjoyed that. And I dig that stuff. So it was a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, he's a fun guy to talk to, really. And really, as you could see, very engaging and very sociable guy. So, yeah, I mean, that question, I had to remind him of it. You could hear me in the interview basically saying, yeah, we were talking about, I always talked about the sacrifice of you know, that are obvious, the sacrifices that are obvious to viewers, the ones where you see mm-hmm. the guy bunting and moving a runner over. But there's the other one where the batter tries to hit behind the runner and makes a concerted effort mm-hmm. to hit behind the runner to move him over. And he said, yeah, that happens on the mound too. And I obviously, you don't want to be in a position where you have a runner on third base with fewer than two outs, but if it happens, I've heard stories. I read about a story last year, I think it was, with Tomoyuki Sugano, the ace of the Giants, and him saying he really felt that the manager had a lot of confidence in him because he brought the infield in the first inning when there was a runner at third, situation where a fly ball or a ground ball might get them home, because he felt like, well, if he trusts me to pitch with the infield in the first inning, and I never thought about it this way, but Sugano said, if he trusts me to pitch with the infield in the first inning, that tells me a lot about, he thinks this is going to be the kind of game where I can win it, a close game. And mm-hmm. I didn't really understand it, but if he feels that that's the manager showing faith in him, then you go with it, dude. And to have a runner at third and think, well, I don't want to give this runner a chance to score because it's gonna make my ERA look bad. Now we're getting into a lot of things. For Matt, he was talking about, okay, this was the mindset when I was in AAA, but when you're in the big leagues, that's an issue, right? Because if you're not the star reliever, you don't want to have an ERA that's too high. And then you think about the offseason, and when you go to negotiate contracts and all that stuff, you don't want to have an ERA that's too high. Or if you want to move, you're going to move from one team to another, if your ERA is too high, So everything, I mean, I never thought of it that way. I always thought of these guys, they always say, hey, look, we just want to win. I'm just happy if we win. But then you hear these comments that let you know that sometimes maybe that's not the same agenda for everybody at every time in the game, at every moment of the game. So I thought that was intriguing.
If you'll remember, 3 years ago, we had an interview with Terry Collins, and we've had a couple, but had an interview with Terry Collins, and I asked him, actually, I don't remember if this was on our podcast. It might not have been, but I talked to Terry Collins at the baseball winter meetings in Nashville 3 years ago. And he said one of the things that he brought back with him from Japan was the value of one run.
Yeah, you did talk about that.
Because the majors is so much, we'll score a bunch and they'll score a bunch and we'll score more. So we keep that, you limit their big innings, limit the big innings. And he said, yeah, you go out there and, bring the infield in the first inning, and his pitchers were going, Terry, what are you doing? Give me a break. And he says, no, it's not like that. You deserve to be, because we can win this game 1-0.
Mm.
And I'm going to give you a chance to win this. You're the kind of pitcher only needs one run to win this game. And that's how I feel about it. We're not going to give him anything. And so it's like a good bunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a, it's like a good bunt in the sense that at the right time and the right place, that's the right message.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when the guy hits a comebacker to the mound, then it's the right message.
But if he hits one over the mound and into center field.
He's a dribbler between, past the box into center field. Then that's the wrong message. It's all in retro. I don't mean that exactly, but I'm just saying that it can be the right message. You know, it can be that shot of confidence that you mentioned about Sugano.
Right. But the other thing that was interesting to me was the notion that some pitcher, you know, who left three, was this the notion of the win and putting it on the mm-hmm. pitcher and making him the focus of the game when he's not on the field. And I've spoken about this before. It drives me crazy. I would just like to totally get rid of the win-loss situation for pitchers, or even make it the battery. You know, the battery is this person and this person. They both get a win and a loss. Because it's not always the pitcher's fault. He might have made the exact pitch that the catcher called for. And if you have a situation where you have a catcher like, let's say, Shinosuke Abe, who's a veteran catcher, has been around the game a long time, and he's got a young pitcher on the mound, and he says, we're throwing this pitch and we're throwing it right here. And you execute the pitch exactly as he says, and it gets knocked around for whatever, and they lose the game. That goes on the pitcher's record. And I remember reading this book a long time ago, and one of the pitchers getting mad at his catcher, and this was a first-person account of it, and he said, look, mm-hmm. next time we're going with this pitch, and I'm going to tell you why. And he grabbed a newspaper, and he brought the newspaper over to the catcher, and he said, you see whose name it has next to this loss? It's mine. So we're going to go with the pitch that I want to throw because I'm the one who's responsible for it. And I totally understand that you have to make somebody ultimately responsible for these wins and losses. And why not the pitcher? He's got the most impact on it. But these catchers also have a lot of impact. So anyway, I get tired of seeing it. I saw it just this past week where we had the young rookie pitcher, Takuya Kuwahara for the Giants. And he's out of the game. You know, he pitched well, but he's out of the game. He's been on the bench. He's not even sweating. And the whole focus is on this kid and him getting a win. And I think it was at SoftBank. And I mean, I'm like, come on, man. Let's talk about the guys who are on the field who really contributed to the final outcome instead of some guy who's chillaxing on the bench.
Well, you know, it seems to me it's more common recently. It's almost like they've run out of ideas that we're just going to show the starting pitcher on the bench. You know, and I want somebody like Mike Bolsinger, you know, is really laid back, and he might be like playing dominoes back there or something. Like he really doesn't.
Otherwise, yeah.
Not that he doesn't
otherwise
care,
known as Bolsinger.
Not that he doesn't care. Is it Bolsinger?
He's a singer.
Bolsinger? Yep. Bull singer. Yep. Oh, he is. He's the minute bull singer. Okay.
80s reference. NBA folks.
Indeed. A small one.
Very thin one.
Okay. Not
thinly veiled reference.
Right. That's right. Right. Okay. So, but the point is, my take on this is it seems much more common now, and I'm a little, I see it a little different. At least I conceive of it slightly differently than John does, which is I see it as not like, let's not focus on the guy chilling on the bench because they all seem interested in the game as the sake of a team, for the sake mm-hmm. of a team. But the producers are sort of like, for the sake of this individual, you know, he's concerned, the team's trying to get him this win. Well, forget about the team getting him the win. Remember about getting the win. And the people, and mine is not so much about the guy on the bench, but yeah, we should be focusing on the people who actually can do something about it. And so I'm just sort of seeing the way I think of it in slightly different words, but yeah, we're there. And it looks silly. It looks unimaginative. And so, you know, one of those producers who probably read some of my stories will be going, silly, unimaginative. tomorrow. I'll be getting some hate.
Right. My whole point is the win can be fickle. It can go to a guy who comes in with the team losing by a couple runs, maybe makes one pitch and gets a double play, or even picks a guy off base, doesn't even make a pitch, gets an out, and then the team rallies and happens to score some runs. When he's coming out of the game anyway for a pinch hitter in the Central League, and maybe he's coming out of the game because he was only that matchup for that one batter anyway, and then he ends up getting a win, or a guy who can throw 130, 140, 150 pitches and labor for a win. I just think, you know, they're fickle, and we shouldn't reward this guy as the hero of the game sometimes is what it seems that they're doing with these TV producers, you say. And you know, just find the guy who really contributed to the game on a whole. And if it is the pitcher, that's fine. But if it's not, let's not make a big deal about it. I think Matt and I were on the same. We found common mound with that is what I wanted to say.
Oh, wow. I sure there was some slope to that.
Had a lot of depth.
Oh well, good.
All right, so let's talk about the Swallows. They obviously have turned it on here in Interleague. We'll get to the Interleague portion of the program a little bit later, but I talked to our beat reporter with the Yomiuri first, and then I talked to another reporter friend when I was out there. I didn't get a chance to talk to Nori Chikaoki, although I wanted to, and he was really nice and said hi to me, and as did my buddy Kazuhiro Hatakeyama. And I was talking to Coco Ballantyne, and one of my reporter friends wanted me to ask him a question, and we ended up asking about the balls that are borderline. I said, look, are the balls that are borderline, would you prefer an umpire who calls those strikes because you know you're going to have to swing at them, or do you want him to call them balls? And he said, If I think it's a ball, I want him to call it a ball. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I think it was JP. It was Jeremy Powell who said every hitter who takes a ball thinks it's outside the strike zone. That's why he's taking it. And I think we heard Coco back that up. But Coco said this was in this team all along. It's not some hot streak. He thinks that they've found something. As did, you know, Matt said that in the interview. I'm not so sure, but one of my reporter friends said that the bullpen has been so successful. The combination of Hikaru Nakao and then Kazuki Kondo, the former Oryx player who was a cast off after he was injured and needed surgery, but he's coming back strong. And then Taichi Ishiyama, whom we spoke about on the show last week. And there's some buzziness going on about this trio of, guys, so they wanted to get a nickname. Remember back in, I think it was when I started with you at the Yomiuri in 2005 and 6, and they had the JFK trio, and gosh, who was that?
2005. Yeah,
Jeff Williams, Kyuji Fujikawa at the back, and who was the other guy?
Tomoyuki Kubota. No neck, Tomoyuki Kubota.
So those three, that was the JFK. So then some other guys at SoftBank, they had, I don't know what it was, AKB something or other. And that was with Takahiro Mahara and Brian Falkenborg and somebody else. And I don't know that it's important because that wasn't a really great longstanding, you know, something that goes down in the annals of baseball history here. But they stuck.
And the Marines had one as well with
Yabuta.
Yeah, whose name? Yasuhiko Yabuta, Fujita, the lefty, and Masahiko Kobayashi. But for the life of me, I can't.
Right. These Swallows, what do they have? A couple good weeks or maybe a 3-week run, and they already want to come up with a nickname like, you know, NK something or other with Nakao, you know, and Ishiyama at the back. So I'm not ready. I'm not down with that because I want to see more. But they still have a hodgepodge, I think, with the bullpen. They even had Kyohei Nakamura up. And I don't know. He didn't do very well the other day. And Aoki was patting him on the shoulder, trying to cheer him up on the bench and all this stuff. But I still think they're searching. They're still searching. But they seem to right the ship. You know, everybody's talking about how much better their pitching got, and they had won 7 games in a row. And it, you know, I was just still shaking my head because they had won so many games in Interleague against the Pacific League. It's just unbelievable. I couldn't fathom. And the ERA is coming down, but still, I'm not sure that this is sustainable for this team. I think it's operating at peak performance in some situations. Not every situation, but in some.
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, I'm sure some listeners will remember that I thought the Swallows were a lot better than their numbers. But I think right now is about as I think right now the Swallows you see is what you see is what you get. They're slightly below 500 team. I don't mean interleague.
Overall.
I mean the season as a whole. Yeah, but whereas before I thought they were their record was not representative of their quality. I think their current record for the around 480 is.
I mean, yeah, they have 28 wins, and so do the Dragons, and we've not said really anything good about the Dragons most of the season. Now, the losses are much different, but the win total is right there. The Bay Stars have 28 wins, and Hanshin's in second place with 29 wins. So, I mean, there's not a lot of separation. If you do what they did, which is win a bunch of games in a row, you can pull yourself out of the gutter and up onto the curb, but that doesn't mean you're in the penthouse or anywhere near it.
Yeah, but I have liked because of the interleague, because of the interleague issues. I watched three Swallows games this week, which is probably my high for the year.
Oh, and you saw that so-called inside the park home run the other day, then?
Well, I saw that after the fact because I didn't have the TV on at that point. But I did see it afterwards, or actually I saw it on the internet. But yeah, that was
That's an inside the park error, okay? I mean, that...
Yeah, pretty much he fell over backwards and then he looked like he was dizzy. And
right. I talked about this as well years ago on the show, and I get so frustrated because an infielder flinches and lets a ball play him on the infield and gets an error for it, and an outfielder butchers a ball like that or loses it in the lights, whatever the case may be, but he misplayed it, and... He didn't even really get up to try to do anything after it.
Well, that was the thing. I think he was disoriented, flipping over backwards. No, I'm serious. I think it disoriented him, or he was dizzy because of something. Because he was just like, he was just, oh,
you
no,
I heard
something.
The announcers talking the next day, and they were saying that Kaneko was telling him, the ball's behind you, as he was racing toward the situation. But I don't know why he didn't get up and go looking for the ball.
Yeah, he looked like he was stunned. To be honest, he was sitting there. He was taking a knee. You know, if he wasn't stunned, even if he just fell over and went back and got it, it's a triple. But but Aoki didn't slow down, to his credit. But yeah, give it to him.
And then the day I went out Wednesday, the start of that series, Tetsuto Yamada had to sit out that night because he had a contusion or he had run into a fellow player the night before.
Oh, his rib.
No, it was a left arm. I got that from the team. Yeah, from somebody on the sideline.
Oh, well, what was reported the following day was a rib on the eighth rib.
Well,
so maybe there's
that might have been something else that he felt on the next day or as well. Maybe both. First the arm and
but he was pinch running and I did get to see I have been watching, you know, one of the things as I was gonna say before we got to Mr. Akiyama's downfall.
That.
That's all right. You're due. And was that I've seen a lot of really good swings from the Swallows. And it's been very nostalgic. Shingo Kawabata playing first base is a little weird for me to comprehend but watching his, you know, he's got that really slow bat through the strike
zone. Right,
doesn't
overswing.
That, you know, the opposite field, you know, it reminds me exactly of when Norichika Aoki was playing with the Kansas City Royals in the 2014 World Series, and the San Francisco Giants left fielder was playing like 20 feet behind the shortstop to catch that ball. When he was the first batter to face Madison Bumgarner in Game 7 and the only batter who seemed close enough to get a hit.
Right.
So, I mean, they were just playing him perfectly, and that's where you got to play Kawabata, is like right behind shortstop because that's his lucky zone. So I saw that. Yuhei Takai's had some really good swings. Tomotaka Sakaguchi has had some really good swings. I mean, not like works of art, not your, you know, nobody's going to put them in the Louvre like they would with a Shohei Ohtani swing, but effective on tough, you know, tough two strike pitches, yeah. You know, going down and covering the plate and putting the ball in play. And I really liked that. So it was nostalgic. It was nostalgic. Like, you know, they were partying like it's 2000.
Yeah. Japan series. Yes. I saw a couple of the Lions pitchers, on occasions, shaking their heads, you know, like these guys really put some at bats on you. They make it tough, and you can make, some good pitches and get them into some situations, make your pitch and they foul them off. And they're still up there, and you've got to figure out another pitch to throw and try to execute it. It does make some of the guys. It was making some of the Lions pitchers shake their heads, but with all their head shaking, they were only able to win one of those games. And the Swallows came out with the series win, so that was good for them. And I just, like I told Matt, I really am curious to see how long they can keep this up. I did not have them finishing last, so I will. I had the Giants finishing last. I'll say it again. But, you know, it's still up for grabs. I mean, look, like I said, you lose three in a row.
You think?
It's still really close. It's still really bunched together.
Sure. And the way this league is going, you know, some unfortunate injuries and...
Every injury is unfortunate.
Blisters. Well, I mean, some, you know, key injuries, I guess, players to, you know, the Carp could finish last in this league. I doubt that, actually. They've got too much depth to finish
last. But they could. You are correct.
But they could, yes. I mean, this could be a really weird year. I mean, I'm not, let's put it this way. I still have my hotels booked in Nagoya for the Japan series. Because it just could go that way.
It could. You are correct.
Although, to be honest, I think they could win the league and then get blown out and play the playoffs like they didn't know they were playing in them. Wait, hold on a second. They're over? Yeah. Wait a second.
We didn't even get, hey.
Do over.
So let's shift, make a four-seam transition and talk about Interleague. And I guess we're going to go back to the Yakult Swallows. Now, they're up there. They had a chance, really, to end this thing and finish with the best record in Interleague play. But they lost yesterday, and they lost again today. And
on Saturday.
And... meanwhile, their competition is pushing ahead. So the standings are really close. I was thinking about waiting until Sunday night to do the taping of the show and then come out on Monday after our Interleague had been decided. But Jim was careful to point out that we had some makeup games going into the week. We have games on Monday. That's a rarity. We have games on Tuesday and Wednesday. There are five games remaining, and it includes the teams that are at the top. So I'm hoping that the Swallows can make that push and become the first Central League team other than the Giants to win the Central League or finish with the best Central League record, right? Because we don't say win Central League
play. Well, the Swallows did, you know, they in 2005, the Swallows came down to the final series with a chance to win the Interleague title, but they lost to... They lost to the Lotte Marines at Jingu Stadium in the rain. So hopefully this, you know, 13 years later.
You know, my thing says 2006 they finished second. 2005 they were fifth.
Okay. Oh, maybe not. Maybe it was the Marines.
And Marines, yeah.
The Swallows were out Marines. Of it. They'd won it in 2005, and they clinched it against the Swallows, but... Okay, the Swallows weren't in it. Okay, so anyway, it's been a long time for the Swallows to have a chance. That would be nice, but we'll see, you know.
You don't sound... wait a second now. You don't sound very optimistic at all, sir.
Well, why should I be optimistic? I mean, it's just a crapshoot. I mean, it's all down to a couple of games. They basically have propelled themselves within, you know, a chance to compete for the pennant in July, which is a good thing because things weren't going well before the start of Interleague.
True. But, the Interleague surprise, they are the surprise team of the Interleague. So when finish with, I keep saying that we're programmed to say this, but finishing with the best record or not, they've gotten back into the Central League standings, and I think that's important as well. They're still under 500. I still couldn't tell you who the guys are, who their six-man rotation would be, clearly and for sure. But hey, look, they're a game up on Cebu and Oryx and SoftBank. They have 11 wins in Interleague. Those other three teams have 10. So it'll be fun watching early on in the week. We don't have that many games, so we'll be able to focus on them and see who finishes with the best record. I'm looking forward to it. I'm pulling for your Swallows.
One of the things that kind of interested me was, of course, they shifted Matt Caricetti to the start, to gave him a chance to start, and they had him throwing a long relief the other day. As Judy Jara is now in relief. Yeah, and he just really stunk the place up as a starting pitcher, and now he's coming in as a reliever, and he's been pretty much lights out.
Yeah.
So good. You know, it's lots of little things. And as I said last week or perhaps the week before, I really do like, I'm getting a good vibe from their coaching staff like I did in 2015. So I'm all on board the Swallows train, you know, for maybe finish 500 this year. Wow.
Yeah. I did talk to another reporter friend of mine, and we were talking about the fact that Miyamoto is in a perfect spot. He can make some decisions, but he doesn't have to face the press all the time and talk about every little move that the team makes. And he can tell players, he can give them advice. He's in a really good spot. And they said, hey, it might be next year that he takes over. It might not be. He might really actually be comfortable where he is. So that'll be interesting to watch as well as we get into the offseason, this offseason coming, to see if that they make a move up at the top there as far as the brass. But he looks good. You're right. I got the same vibe. I think everybody looks happy. They obviously, when the players start winning, they have a little bit more pep in the step at the pregame stretch where I took pictures and sent them out. Coco was having fun. It just looks like a different atmosphere from the team that I saw at Tokyo Dome earlier in the season. So it looks like fun. I did want to mention the Carp. You know, they have annually had poor results in interleague play.
Except last year when John predicted them to do badly.
And they did really well. They tied for the, as you described or mentioned on the show recently, they had a tie for the best record, but they didn't get it because of a technicality, so whatever. But this year they've been bad again, and they've been struggling, and, I can only hope that they get it together, but I just don't see. You know, they came into this thing with a, 10 or 11 games over 500, and they're struggling. Let's put it that way. They're down to 5. So that's not good, because the other teams are actually not doing so poorly. And even Shintaro Fujinami had a good start the other day. 6 and a third, I think it was, scoreless innings.
I know. It was. Yeah, actually, I heard somebody saying, you know, call Guinness Book of World Records or something. You know, it's like, you know, and then somebody called him and they said, no, we're waiting for Yuki Saito to throw 6.
Oh, what a joke! Okay. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't want to see him on the mound in an MPB top team game, and I don't want to hear about his name on my show. Oh well, the poor guy.
Edit. No. Note to self. Edit.
That happens all the time. You don't have to make notes to myself. Let's make a seamless transition and talk about something that we've been.
Comes naturally to you, does it?
You don't know the half of it. No, it does not. It does not
I,
at all.
I try
it,
not
it,
to.
It
yeah.
comes. I do each time I do it. I pause and with great thought and.
And then a little smile curls up in his lip and says, "Interrupt
and
me."
Numerous pangs to my heart, I cut out what needs to be cut out to shorten the show for our listeners. It's all for the listeners, baby.
It is all for the listeners.
Let's talk about something that came up and has been it's gotten more responses than I've gotten on most anything that I've tweeted about, and that's the home run situation that we've been going back and forth with or about. for most of the weekend here, which has only been one day, right? Saturday. Now, I brought this up earlier on. You tweeted it out. You said you did a study on the number of home runs. I saw it on TV that home runs were up. I kind of saw some balls that were flying a little bit differently than I've been used to in the past, let's say, couple seasons. And you looked at data. I've looked at the actions of the balls. Now, tell the people who don't follow on Twitter and haven't heard about this whole thing, what you found.
What did I find? Well, first of all, John mentioned this about a month ago. And I mentioned it to Dennis Arfating. He says, oh, yeah, I'm telling you the balls are flying. And I looked at it and I thought,
small sample size.
Just what I, you know, just at that date and that point in time, I didn't see anything unusual about it. I didn't really go into a great deal. Nothing popped out at me. But, you know, with all the stuff that happened on June 6th in the major leagues with Shohei Ohtani and Meredith Will's study coming out about the difference in the stitching on MLB balls is larger, she found out. And this is creating a bunch of unforeseen circumstances in the major leagues. Basically, the balls are flying straighter and they're maintaining their shape better. So they fly better. They're more aerodynamically sound, but the stitches are also causing some pitchers to get blisters. Right. Okay. So, the point being that I thought about that, and then I told her when we were talking about it on June 6th, I said, I'm going to look at the NPB stuff again. You know, when I got through a bunch of stories. So I did that, about 5 days ago. And sure enough, it looks almost like, and we can't be certain, but the same things are going on in Japan. The same effects, I shouldn't say the same things are going on, but we're seeing the same result.
Okay.
A huge increase in the number of home runs. And when I say huge, I mean the last time home runs were as common at this time of the year as they are this year. Mizuno was putting balls, was making balls that had rocket engines in them.
Hashtag high heat.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I did a column. You know, in the majors, they used to say when you hit a home run, you're dialing not that. Well, one, I'm not saying this is what they always said, but one common expression for a home run was to dial 9, because that's how you get an outside, you know, long distance number. And used to be how you got a long distance number from a hotel the players were staying at. You dial 9, and you know, you go deep. And and I was thinking of dial M, not for murder, but you know, dial M for Mizuno, dial M for home runs. And yeah, their balls were really juiced back 14, 15, 16 years ago. And that's about how lively how well these balls are getting out of the park. And with the increase in strikeouts, we're talking about, I should actually review the numbers, but you can look them up on my blog, jballallen.com.
Right. He's got a graphic there that I've actually called up and I'm looking at right now.
Oh, thank you. And forgive me. One of my Twitter followers said, and I think it was, Steve, the Marines blogger, who asked if he said, but I may be wrong. He said that this spring has seemed unusually cold. So shouldn't the home run numbers be down? And if that is true, that would be a normal conclusion of the weather being cold. It would be fewer home runs. And interestingly enough, he said, do you have indoor and outdoor numbers? Well, I didn't that day, but I had a long time on the train to Kobe today, so I did that in my free time. And sure enough, the home runs in indoor parks, and I didn't include Cebu Dome in that for obvious reasons.
Yeah, obvious. It's
are up. Well, obvious is that it's open.
It's open
to
air.
The elements.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not protected from the elements. It's not really indoors. So are up by about 30% what they were the previous 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And outdoor parks are up about 20%. But what I'm guessing is going to happen is that when the summer months hit, if it is the balls,
right,
and the Japanese the Japanese Players Union has asked NPB, and they've said, no, the balls are as lively as they have been. What they mean is, you know, they smash them against something and see how much energy they
release. Right. Yes. We've discussed. Right. Yes.
And that's what MLB did originally. And they said, yeah, no, the material's the same. They're just as lively as before, but they didn't count about how well they fly. So anyway, to cut that short, the balls may be just traveling better. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Dr. Meredith Wills does get a chance to cut open NPB balls and baseballs and examine the parts, that she will find that Mizuno has been using a thicker thread to keep the balls flying.
We've had issues in the past, and the coefficient of restitution issues, and mm-hmm. you know, it was slightly up and this and that and the other. And I all I can tell you is, after I made mention of the fact that there were more home runs, I started watching how and who have been hitting home runs. And I actually had to bother our buddy Jason Koskri, and he reminded me of some things. But I said, who? Yeah, I remember Jose Lopez banging a ball off the back wall at Tokyo Dome, and everybody saying, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. And someone else did it, like, very soon after that. And I talked to Jason, and he said, yeah, Ballantyne did it. Willen Rosario did it, and Diane Viciado of Chunichi did it. And I said, man, you got that pretty quick. And he said, yeah, there was an article. The Asahi had an article about it, about the long home runs. And then I started thinking, okay, well, I remember in Interleague, Carlos Peguero smashed a ball to Mars outside of Yokohama Stadium that nobody could find. And Lotte's Ikuhiro Kyoto hit an opposite field home run at Nagoya Dome, and that made me shake my head. I'm like, wait a second. And I saw the pitch, and I'm like, that went out? And so I just started thinking about all the home runs I've seen that just came off the bat not looking like they were going to be anything but a fly ball, and that they're going out. So I would say, just with the naked eye, that I've just seen some balls hit normally that they've gone out of the park. So this weekend on Twitter, it's one of the guys who, I think he's either a blogger or just a loyal fan of the Fighters, and he made light of the fact that some balls that have not traveled that far going over the wall in recent seasons, we've seen a drop in those, that the balls are going farther over the wall, essentially. And so he called them cheap home runs, whatever home runs you want to call them. If they go over the fence, I don't think they're that cheap. But you and I believe, and I tweeted this out, we've seen our share of pop flies that just seem to carry at Tokyo Dome, or get in the wind and carry well at Yokohama Stadium, or sometimes there can be a jet stream at Zozo Marine Stadium, it's called now, out at Chiba, and other places that, you know, Jingu, where you can, especially in the summer, a guy doesn't have to hit a ball that well, and sometimes they get out. Yeah, okay. But I don't think that just counting the number of longer or distance on the home runs is going to tell us. But I just have seen something different in the way. Now, I don't know if it's the way the guys are swinging. I don't know what else. I said there's too many variables, right? There's a swing. There's all
this
other
stuff. My guess is there are a variety of issues, but my first instinct, I don't actually have any instincts, I make all this up. My first thought goes to something contextual. You know, they've changed, something is different. And I mean, and this is a classic one, and I go back to 2013 when everybody was going, well, these balls were so dead last year, how come we've got all the home runs? And you know, and people said, oh, guys are adjusting better. You know, manager Koji Akiyama of the Hawks said, oh, yeah, no, guys are just getting better swings.
Yeah.
Now, we did see that to some degree in the second half of 2011 when the lights got brighter and batters started putting their trying to pull everything because they thought the only way they were going to have power was to pull it. And they basically just met the ball and worried less about hitting. You know, I guess just focused on doing their thing, that the home runs can't creep back into the game because it was a lost cause in the first part of that season. nobody was hitting home runs except Takeya Nakamura, who was like Babe. I mean, it was like he invented home runs that year. So anyway, yeah. So that was a thing, and Matt Merton and I talked about this, and he says when you see everybody's doing it and the same things applying across the field, it's probably not an adjustment issue by a few players.
Yes. Yeah, I could go for that.
So that's where I'm thinking is that now there are issues in the data. There are issues in the data, for example, you know, if we go too far back, that the outfield fences are closer to home plate, particularly at two parks, at in Yafuoka Dome and also at in Sendai. So that's changed things. And I think, I do not know why, but Sapporo Dome has become a better home run park. And my guess is they've probably switched to LED lighting, and the lighting, the balls are easier to see there.
All right. Yeah. And, I'm not sure if I'm going to go with that, but okay. I mean, that's another variable.
But I think, it's a package, because whenever one park changes, the whole league changes.
Okay.
When home runs become more common in Fukuoka and Sendai, they relatively become, you know, less frequent somewhere else. But for some reason, Kyocera Dome has become a tougher home run park, and Sapporo Dome has become an easier home run park. And I really don't know why that is, but that's just the way it
goes. Well, I like the Matt Merton statement, and I think what could back that up is I've seen guys like Yohei Oshima of the Dragons. He had a little home run binge a couple weeks, or he has had one in during interleague. We got guys like Koji Oshiro of the Oryx, Buffaloes hitting home runs a couple times, and Yuya Oda for the Buffaloes hitting home runs. I mean, little guys are pounding home runs, and something looks weird. But anyway, I want to move along. I think something to keep an eye on. I hope we can look at the data a little bit more closely around the All-Star break and talk to some of the players about what they're seeing. One note, after today's loss, the Rakuten Eagles manager Masataka Nashida decided he was going to step down. And that came after a 2-1 come from a head loss to Hanshin that dropped the Eagles 20 games below 500. And another game where, I mean, yeah, this is a team that I picked to win to beat the SoftBank Hawks and win the Pacific League. Ha ha ha. It's just been, things have been awful from the beginning. Poor performances by players. I think some poor decisions by management. I'm not going to blame that all on him, but he is the final. He has the final say in these things. Bench coach Yosuke Hiraishi is going to take over in the interim. I don't know where the team goes from here. Your thoughts, Jim?
Well, Hiraishi is kind of interesting. I think he was one of the originally, and this is just trivia stuff. He, as I recall, he was one of the original Eagles, and he was one of the players that when they formed the Eagles in 2005, they had basically a tryout camp. You know, they brought in all these old guys.
Yeah, and I remember
they were
that.
Sort of
yeah.
like throwing them into the fire. You know, they're throwing them against the wall to see which of them stuck. And Hiraishi was a guy who really never did anything in his career, but he was so impressive in the spring that he got a job. But he really wasn't a very good player. But I'm glad to see he's moving up in the world. Well, my thoughts are, as everybody knows, I love Masataka Nashida. Another blog post I did today on the train coming home when I heard about it. It's not finished yet because I've got many more things to bore people with about Nashida. But there is a kind of a funny story him telling me one year in preseason when I was quizzing him and bugging him. There's a couple of funny stories in there. I hope you like them. I think the Eagles we both saw. In fact, I think last week we said.
Well, I tweeted about it. I'm sure it's about 10 days ago, and I said if they stay on this pace or if anything close to it, we're going to hear about Nashida stepping away or taking the leave of absence as managers do and never come back from in this country. And yeah, it was
sad.
But they have been underperforming. And I don't know, like you said last week, that Norimoto, their ace pitcher, doesn't like to come out of games. And I said, well, look, he's got to come out. And that's part of being the manager, is managing the personality, not just the player. And you got to go get him. And they gave up another game today. And I won't guarantee it, but I would bet that they're not going to lose too many more games like that, where Norimoto is out there in a situation where he's compromised physically, whether it's fatigue, whether he's just thrown too many pitches, or the opposition is he's going through the lineup for a fourth time maybe, and they're not comfortable with it, and somebody goes to take him out, and they say, hey, you know, it's time for you to come out. Maybe mm-hmm. then we won't see that in the second half of the season. I don't know. The new guy's going to have to manage that personality.
Could be.
That's part of it.
Could be. I think he's mellowed a bit. I mean, he did some weird stuff in Nippon Ham, as I mentioned, and he's done some. But he's always been a little bit about that. You know, he's always been. He's got a couple of weird ideas going on, and they've worked so well for him in the past. You know, he was particularly good about taking really good hitting catchers and making them outfielders and first basemen and so on, and finding other uses for players and being very positive. And that positivity just kind of, you know, last year we thought, wow, this team's really moving forward.
That's what I thought.
That's what it looked like. And so much so that during our prediction show, I went, how could I pick them to finish fifth? What was I, you know, what?
No, not you. Numbers, yes, your random algorithm.
What were the random numbers in my Excel sheet, spreadsheet thinking?
Yeah, you hide behind that thing. actually, you can't step out in front of it when you get something sort of right. But anyway, my deal with it is I want to see what they do. I mean, obviously, Zelis Wheeler has a broken finger, a fractured finger. He's going to miss some time. So Ginji is not really a second baseman. I think they're going to have to identify or deal with that situation. This kid, what is his name? Kazuki Tanaka in center mm-hmm. has been playing really well. Made me even forget about Louis Okoye. Okoye Dixon has come up and has, albeit against some of the Dragons pitchers, he got some hits. He looks like he might be starting to find his way here in MPB. They're going to have some decisions to make about where to play guys defensively. I believe Ginji is a better third baseman than he is any other place, but maybe first base. I don't know, but they've got decisions to make, and this interim manager, Hiraishi, is going to have to make those decisions, going to have to make those moves. And I say he comes in with a lot of pressure if he wants to keep the job or even stay on the staff, although I know they don't get rid of guys who are interim managers generally, so he might not have to prove anything.
Yeah, I know. That is the funny thing in Japan. Pretty much teams want to make as few changes as possible. So if they've got an interim manager, let's keep him, even if he's, you know, maybe he'll prove us wrong. Maybe we don't think he's good, but he might be good. You know, it's easier. You know, how can I say this without sounding really jaded and obnoxious? I can't.
All right.
Okay. You know, I think these front office guys are just going, well, it's too much trouble to change him. He might be good.
He might develop into something. All right.
Yeah.
Let us move into fielding questions. All right. So our buddy Coaster Freak sent us a high heat tweet, and that was during the week. And he said, the Dragons have one of the lowest payrolls, if not number 12. Well, I actually looked it up, and it's number 11. But with the steady decline of print journalism in the internet era, and he says, in parentheses, sorry, could Chinichi be forced to sell the team in the long-term future? And if yes, who would be interested in buying hashtag high heat? Jim.
I would
be interested too.
I got 20,000 yen that I could borrow from my insurance.
You could put together a group of all the interested foreign fans and journalists and
no,
all of us, and we could buy our own team.
No.
Then we could get all these people who are experts, you know, the tweeterers, and we could run the team. We'd win every year.
Hashtag high heat.
We could run it into the ground. Okay, no, I don't think it's going to happen. The Dragons are in a tight spot, but they've been learning about coping. And what I mean learning by coping, basically the Dragons' response to the crash of the print newspaper industry has been to stop buying free agents.
Mm-hmm.
And has been to comb, you know, spend more, invest more time and energy combing the Dominican Republic and Cuba.
Right.
For talent. And that seems to be working really well. I mean, they have their ears to the ground and they get some pretty darn good players. I mean, Onelki Garcia, I mean, what a find.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one, but with the kid Rydell Martinez, yeah. I like him too. And he's, mm-hmm. like I said, he's still in 21. So, yep. They go in that direction, let a guy develop a little bit. That's going to be cheap.
See, yeah. The problem the Dragons are having is that they've got to fill the roster up with, you know, 60 Japanese guys. And they have to compete with everybody else for that. And that's hard when you don't have the money. It means it's no free agent. It's no excess depth at the minor league level. It's not excess money spent on fitness and training, like the Hawks do. So they're shut out to some extent from the money that the Carp, you know, the Carp and the Hawks and the Giants are pumping into their minor league system.
Yeah.
So it's tough. I don't think Chunichi is going to sell them, but I think they're just going to keep, you know, going the bargain basement
route. Yeah. I mean, I agree. Print journalism is dying a slow death. It's like a slow leak and it has to evolve, but I think it will actually. And I think, you know, some papers more rapidly than others will develop something on the internet and survive, at least have the media as a field survive. So the Chunichi and the Yomiuri newspapers have battled, you know, in the print and on the field for decades. And I don't think that the Chunichi newspaper is waiting around saying, well, we're going to stay in business until Yomiuri fades and then we'll fold. They're going to stay in business forever is their plan, right?
Yeah, there was, you know, I'll tell this story that John knows, but when we were both working at the Yomiuri in the English department, known as the Daily Yomiuri, there was a constant rumor.
Mm-hmm.
People want to get rid of the Daily Yomiuri. They want to get rid of it. And as soon as the Asahi stops doing a paper, because the Asahi is our number one rival, we'll dump this thing and you guys will be out of jobs. And I must have heard that pretty much twice a week for 13 years. Well, the Asahi drop kicked its English newspaper now about 10 years ago.
If not more, yeah.
And the jobs are still there.
Yep.
They may look a little different, but they're still there.
Yeah,
so, now the Chunichi newspaper still has a huge role to play as the newspaper of Central Japan. Are they going to drop the team? They might modernize it
somehow. Yeah.
At some point, they might say, "Well, we could be analytical about this."
Or more extremely analytical. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And look for outside additional investors.
Right.
That's a possibility, but to sell it, I don't see that.
So these papers are going to battle to the death. And the one that doesn't die first is going to publish, you know, decades after that, just to rub the other one's face in it, because these are fierce battles in the newspaper business. So,
fierce.
As fierce as newspaper battles can be. So, if I were to fathom for a moment, okay, Chunichi wants to sell. I guess it would be some IT company, some up and coming IT company that we don't know about yet.
Well, gee, the last three companies to buy baseball teams have been IT companies, so I'm guessing that'll be number four. The next one to go will be sold to an IT company.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But it's something that hasn't been developed yet, because this is decades into the future that this is going to happen, right? So it's not going to be tomorrow.
Hmm.
So there's your answer. I can't see it happening. Yeah, I don't see it happening yet. And when it happens next year, I'll be I'll bring up the tape in this show.
That's right. You heard it, here first.
It was never going to happen. Well, today is never. All right. One last little note. Now, the umpire, Naoto Shikita, he's a 46-year-old umpire. He was calling balls and strikes at the Lions and Dragons game today, and he got hit by a foul pitch, a foul tipped pitch that hit him on the knee. And then a few minutes later, he was collapsing and was stretchered off the field. And I haven't seen any reports, anything saying that he's in dire straits at the moment. This is Saturday night, so hopefully on Sunday we get some updates, and hopefully he's okay, so we wish him the best.
Yes.
All right. We'll talk to you next week when the top team or top winning percentage, how do you even say this thing anymore? They've messed it up.
Yeah, the interleague winner. Let's just stick with the winner. Let's just stick with it.
The winner of interleague play is decided, so until then, enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballpark. Back in your regular season ballparks, league play, period.